MD.com. It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Royson, MD.
Nick Webb is a world-renowned healthcare futurist. He's the author of the best-selling books, The Innovation Playbook, The Digital Innovation Playbook, Breakers, and The Cost of Being Sick. He's a senior partner with Lassen Innovation, and he's provided consulting service to some of the most important firms, Microsoft, Cigna, Healthcare, Gatorade, Intel, Polaris, and 3M. He's an award-winning innovator with over 40 U.S. patents, and including some that have been on the forefront of medicine. We're going to talk to him today, and one of the things I want to talk to him about is his new book that's coming out. It's not out for about 8 months, but he's always in the future, and it's called Wave 3. It's a book about the future of healthcare in America. And Nick has been so right about it. Let's hear what he's going to say. Nick, how are we going to change healthcare so that we can decrease its cost?
Well, that's a great question. I think that the biggest parental answer is the fact that we need to change the way in which the whole industry, and for that matter, individuals, are incentivized. You know, we know from sociology class that we really don't change behaviors unless there is a way in which patients are rewarded and a way in which patients are disincentivized to do things that are self-destructive. And the reason that's important is, as you know, 70 to 80%, in other words, 70 to 80 cents of every dollar that's spent on healthcare is spent on what we now call lifestyle disease. So I think one of the things that we're going to see in this as we transition into wave three, as it relates to the patient, I believe that we'll ultimately have a national health score. And this health score will be very much like a credit card score. And it will determine a range of access in terms of how we gain access to different services and the type of access that we get. Now, I know that sounds sinister, and I get a lot of very shocking responses to this concept of a national health care score. But I think in terms of patients, that'll be a big part of it.
I'm at the Cleveland Clinic, we actually incentivize in a huge way. So yeah, it's important to have a culture change, and yes, it's important to have aha moments and to change the environment and to have programs for the healthy and for the sick. But the key is to have a huge incentive, which we do, as all the other change. And so that's how we've been able to bend the cost curve down. And so you're speaking to the choir here, Nick. I didn't realize you also believe that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to take it to another level, I mean, we know that there is only one way to change bad behaviors. And let's face it, when you have this new concept of gratuitous utilization, or what we call lifestyle disease, if lifestyle disease represents 70 to 80% of the cost of healthcare, we can go to a certain point, but we reach incentive saturation. The psychodynamics that incentivize people to do good only represents a certain amount of total population incentives, right? So if we just try to say, hey, it's really good to be healthy, and if you participate in this, as you've done an amazing job up at the Cleveland Clinic, if we can do that, we know that we can have an amazing impact on cost. But you reach a point of saturation, and I think that if you take a look at it like from the perspective of life insurance. Life insurance the cost of life insurance is directly correlated to your state of health. And most of that is variable cost that you can change by getting to an optimal weight, by changing your diet and all the things that we all know about. So I think that we will see, and again, I'm not sure exactly what the manifestation looks like, but we're going to do incentives. But the part that I think a lot of people aren't quite prepared for is that within the next 5 to 8 years, there will be very well-defined punitive measures to stop people from self-inflicted chronic disease.
Yeah, so just to tell you what we do, and that's to the listeners too, I don't think I've done this in a while, but we, for six normals, normal blood pressure, normal fasting blood sugar, waist less than half your height, normal LDL cholesterol, Can't remember which one I did. No cotinine in your urine and immunizations up to date. You do those six things, and you, if you're a family of four, it's essentially a $2,400 reduction in your health care per year cost. And by that, we actually save money on the family, considerable amount of money we save by doing that and bending the cost curve down, even with all the incentives built in. So that's what we do. And so our health care score is pretty easy. It's just getting to six normals, because once you get to six normals, you really reduce the chronic disease by 80% to 90% over about a 30-year period.
Yeah, that's tremendous.
So that's what we do, Nick. Is do you think will we get incentive burnout at that point too?
Well, I think that there, you know, what we have found from dealing with a lot of total population health in corporate, you know, corporate America has tried this for 4 decades, as you know, and for the most part, they try it. Nobody's on board. They don't get employee engagement. They don't get participation, not at the levels that they were hoping for, even with some reasonably good incentives. And then they quickly pull the switch and go from a wellness strategy to a disease management strategy. And I think that there are additional money on the table, if you will, and certainly lives that can be saved by also creating disincentives. And I think it'll look like this, that as we look at healthcare globally, is that if you're a 65-year-old female and you're 120 pounds overweight and you need a hip, you're not likely going to gain access to that surgery until you reach a certain BMI, for an example. And I know that that there are medical reasons that you're going to have a better post-surgical recovery, but I think that it's also going to be about, look, if you want to be able to gain access to this, you have to meet us by participating in wellness. It'll be more mandatory. And I also think that there could be some kind of almost scary but certainly beneficial manifestations of this as it relates to wearables. We're already seeing people that are making wearables available free to employees, and in return for doing that, they have to basically sign up that if they don't meet, that there's basically an incentive and a disincentive. If they follow the program, they get a well-defined compensation by not doing bad things, but also doing good things. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And one of the things that's happening that I think is most exciting is this concept of patients as a node. We're starting to see some really interesting ways in which we're going to help patients do a far better job of getting a feedback and understanding about what their behaviors do in terms, you know, their daily behaviors, and how that equates to their improved state of health and how it affects their degradation of their health. And I've been in about 17, 18 wearable hackathons in the last few months of innovators creating these new technologies. And it's really exciting to see the way in which we're going to be able to help a lot of patients through wearables.
Now, one of the keys in wearables will be a blood glucose level and an inflammation level. When do you think we'll have those ready?
Well, technically, we have, you know, the Google X contact lens is probably the closest, least invasive way of being able to get glucose levels. I think in terms of inflammation and some of these other things, we could be maybe, you know, a few years off, and I think that they're going to come in the form of appliques, disposable appliques that are able to glean information through continuity data, and ultimately I've seen some stuff that are transdermal kinds of approaches that are gaining some really interesting information. We're going to get to a wearable tricorder within the next 5 to 7 years. Essentially, most of what we are going to want, we're going to get in the next 5 to 7 years. There's just so much work being put into this right now. I can't help but believe that'll be the case.
We'll be right back talking more about incentives and disincentives, because I'm fascinated by that, with Nicholas Webb, our world-renowned healthcare futurist. You can look at nickwebb.com or go to Amazon and any of the books like the Innovation Playbook.
There's more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. The goal of Radio MD is for you to stay well, and our goal is for you to take control of your health so you can live at the top of your curve, and we give you the information. Nick Webb is a tremendous speaker and innovator in this space and talks about the future of healthcare. Nick, how did you get involved in healthcare?
So I started out with a small company, 25 years ago, Star Surgical, and they were the first company to make foldable intraocular lenses, and I just, fell in love with that space, and one thing led to another. I started inventing surgical products in my early 20s and turned in and then in one of the world's smallest microsilicone implants for ocular surface disease, and started really as a technologist, just loving ophthalmology and surgery, and then later started looking at health and healthcare more globally. About 15 years ago, I wrote the first edition of The Cost of Being Sick and made about six or seven predictions that were considered to be ridiculously overstated, and they all came true, and one thing led to another, and now I'm a healthcare futurist, so there you go.
And now you do a lot of healthcare consulting,
yeah,
as well as obviously you do a lot of work on patents, since you've got 42 patents. Of all the patents you have, which do you, not which has been most important, but which do you find most satisfaction in?
I think in my flexible intracanalicular implant that's for ocular surface disease, 57 million of Americans suffer from dry eye syndrome, and my design made it possible to put these punctum inserts into the punctal opening for dry eye syndrome, and it helps, tens of thousands of people have benefited from that technology. So it's really been exciting, and now I work more with large companies like Blue Cross and Cigna and large clinics and pharmaceutical companies to help them, understand really what the trajectory of change looks like in healthcare so that they can do a better job of serving their patients.
And you've now made some predictions about the future and telling us that we're going to have to do a lot better at controlling these costs, because obviously the number of people with obesity and consequent diabetes and heart disease and cancer is and even hip replacement, et cetera, is rising so fast that, and it's not just in the United States, we've exported our bad habits, so it's around the world. We're going to have to do that. If you look out to 2020, whatever, give me 5 or 10 years out, what do you see as the biggest changes that we're going to do, and how are we going to get them done?
Well, the three ways that we've transitioned through, the first last 60, 70 years, we've been exploding treatment interventions, which resulted in increasing the cost of healthcare by 275%. Meanwhile, populations have gotten far sicker. And then when you combine that with the silver tsunami, the aging population, with the sickness of our population, there isn't an economist in the world that has any credentials that could even suggest it's even sort of sustainable. So what happens is we get to this disruptive, wave three is the disruptive phase, meaning that we're not going to fix most clinical models. We're going to destroy clinical models. And by that, take an example of live health that was developed by Anthem. Instead of waiting for, 4 hours to get in to see a doctor, you can see a doctor in 4 minutes. But they're leveraging a community that rates the doctor. So now doctors are instantaneously available. Uber now has doctor on demand, where you can get on Uber in New York City and have a doctor in your Manhattan home in a matter of seconds. So I think the same thing that's happening is going to happen to healthcare that's happened to everything else. In fact, we now call it the Uberfication of healthcare. Things are going to happen faster. Healthcare is going to become a consumer package good. From the patient's perspective, self-destruction by way of sedentary lifestyle and food and alcohol and smoking is going to be very painful for them in terms of the way in which the insurance companies and the government set up punitive measures. So we're going to do a better job incentivizing. We're going to do a better job of punishing to get people to change behaviors. And we're also, I believe, going to change the clinical models to have wellness gatekeepers. I think we're going to start with wellness rather than the older allopathic approach of saying, you know, what drugs do you need to address your sickness? There will be a massive shift in the next 5 years towards prevention and wellness. Absolutely no question about it. When 70 to 80% of the cost of health care are self-inflicted, then the obvious low-hanging fruit is our ability to go to the core causality of disease rather than the expense of trying to fix somebody through expensive drugs and other interventions.
And what I've been both impressed by and depressed by is that even when you make this a huge, we're at the 30% differential now, there are still a number of people who don't participate with us.
Right.
Do you think we'll just keep going up, ratcheting up the price differential so that that is what, and if you will, the gatekeeper differential so that we get to that point?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, we look at healthcare in the United States from a disease perspective. We look at everything as a way. I have to admit, for my entire professional career, I was rewarded by creating treatment interventions. You know, and pharmaceutical companies are rewarded for creating treatments. They're not rewarded for creating solutions, right? If you look at that across the healthcare ecosystem, our incentives are wrong. We don't incentivize people to get people better to a better state of health. And until we change the motivators and the ways in which we leverage changes in human behavior, we're not going to be able to solve this problem. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. So what I'm asking is, so the instead of being at 30%, where do you think we'll have to go? In other words, in a corporate environment, that's pretty easy to do. But in Medicare and Medicaid and the general population, do you think we'll be able to get there?
I think that we're going to be able to leverage game mechanics, social engagement, support tools with wearables that will be made available to that population, because the government and insurance companies will benefit from making those available. But in the process, they're going to say, there will be the punitive measurements. What we're missing right now, and I know it sounds horrible, and I don't mean to suggest I'm advocating for punishing people who are sick, but what I'm saying is there is no incentive for those patient populations to get better. They are not they're incentivized, but they're not disincentivized. A lot of patients play the game not to lose instead of playing the game to win. For that,
we've been talking with Nick Webb, NICKWEBB.com. Go to Amazon for the Innovation Playbook or other books, and look for Wave 3 in about 8 months. Thanks very much, Nick, and thank you for listening.